Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
At the end of a pitted dirt road in the woods of Wellfleet, you can smell the ocean. Perched on a grassy hill just above the dunes is the Hatch House. It's a low-slung modern home built with weather-beaten boards that seem to have grown from the Cape Cod landscape. It's simple, rustic, yet elegantly modern, with a porch that invites you out into the soft summer air. The Hatch House is an example of mid-century American modern architecture, one of about 100 such homes built out here on the Cape in the middle of the 20th century.
I think these buildings, they're very free. The land was cheap. There were no building codes.
We're looking out. This is Cape Cod Bay and all the way north to Provincetown. It's just a beautiful, beautiful view. We came to this beautiful place to meet Peter McMahon and Christine Cipriani, the co-authors of a new book that tells the story of these homes and of the extraordinary group of people who built them. It's called Cape Cod Modern, Mid-Century Architecture and Community on the Outer Cape. Christine Cipriani says the homes were designed and built by two groups of people. First, a collection of largely self-taught Americans, who she refers to as Brahmin Bohemians. Among them, a self-taught architect named Jack Phillips. Christine Cipriani says Phillips inherited a large piece of land on the Outer Cape and decided to try his hand at architecture.
So he put up a little studio, a kind of glass-walled, slant-roofed, shed-roofed studio on the Atlantic Ocean, which is the first place one would think of to build on the Cape. Eventually, it met an end because of its dramatic site by being washed into the ocean, but it did live a long life of several decades of having artists paint there and also people kind of hold dance parties there. So that was kind of the original and in some ways the best kind of Cape modern building.
More Brahmin Bohemians came and built more buildings. They included Nathaniel Saltonstall and Jack Hall, who designed the beautiful Hatch House that we're visiting on this day.
All of these gentlemen were well-educated from essentially affluent families, primed for professional backgrounds, and all in different ways sort of forsook those careers to come out here and teach themselves architecture by doing these very experimental buildings in this very bucolic setting. And the other group of people were the Europeans, who were exemplified by Marcel Breuer, who studied at the Bauhaus and became a master of cabinet making at the Bauhaus, came here with his original mentor, Walter Gropius, to teach at Harvard. And those groups found each other socially and became a loose but pretty happy community. And eventually you had at least 100 modern houses of interest.
When you look at these houses, what's significant about them today? Because, I mean, what amazes me in looking at this house is it just feels so modern still.
There was no really prescription on them to do anything in particular. So they would try all kinds of experimental things that had to do with combining high modern ideas with vernacular Cape architecture. So all this group, the Americans and the Europeans, were very interested in the vernacular buildings.
Does that mean, vernacular buildings?
The oyster shacks,
I see.
The little timber bridges, and the old Cape houses. And there's this sort of duality in modernism in that all the modernists were very, very interested in quote-unquote primitive art and architecture or folk architecture. They liked its honesty. It was unpretentious. It was simple and functional and made with local materials. So more than anywhere else, I think, in the U.S., the Outer Cape modernism is a kind of hybrid of vernacular ideas and sort of high-concept modern ideas. So this is the master bedroom and Ruth's painting studio, her indoor painting studio. She mostly painted outdoors in the landscape.
Ruth was the painter Ruth Hatch, who lived here in the Hatch House.
She lived here into November every year, even though there's no insulation and no heat of any kind.
Oh, so a hardy New Englander, it sounds
right, like.
Yeah.
Yes, and she lived here till she was 93 when she died.
Ruth Hatch's paintings of the Cape Cod landscape still hang on the walls. As lovely as they are, it's the design of this house that is most striking. As we enter the living room, a long, light-filled room that looks out onto the porch and across the dunes to the ocean, Peter McMahon describes what the architect Jack Hall created back in 1961.
He came up with this idea for this sort of modular, semi-prefabricated building that was based on cubes. So these are 7 by 7 foot cubes. Still today, it looks like a pretty radical idea, which is that you go outside to get to the other rooms.
So we're standing now in the living room, which is a fairly long and comfortable room, but this is made up, I guess, what, of 2 or 3 of those cubes?
8 cubes.
8 cubes,
Each one of these modules is 7 by 7 feet.
I see.
Yeah. You know, I first found this house when probably 15 years ago, and it was all closed up because the shutters open and close. So it's the idea is you can adjust it with the weather, open it or close it for ventilation and light. I couldn't tell if it was a house or if it was a storage shed for lobster pots, or I couldn't tell exactly what it was, but it was a fascinating structure. So it has this kind of surreal relationship with the landscape, which is that it's hovering. The deck boards are vertically standing up. And then there's this sort of beautiful sighting of the building so that you're floating above the landscape, perfectly situated to get all the views, but you're not exactly moored to the land. So the idea with these buildings is that you could pick them up and there would be really almost no trace that the building had been there.
What you're describing is almost like a lightness, and it does feel sort of light and hovering in the landscape. Of the 100 mid-century modern homes remaining on the Cape, some are privately owned, and some, like the Hatch House, are owned by a trust, inside the boundaries of what is now the Cape Cod National Seashore. After the national park was established, the government slated some of these buildings for demolition, but Peter McMahon established a trust to save, renovate, and preserve them, including the Hatch House, which is now available to the public to rent.
For various reasons, the houses mostly just sat and languished. I started the trust in 2007 in order to negotiate leases with the national park.
And why was it so important that these be preserved?
Well, I think they're important artifacts in and of themselves. I mean, they're amazing pieces of architecture, and they're important historically. They're also important because of who lived here and what they did. I mean, this was a really vibrant community that produced a lot of really interesting ideas, which came to fruition in the larger world.
It was an important chapter in the history of American modern architecture, but it's also an important little-known chapter in the history of Cape Cod and just the history of New England. It was an art colony that was not known the way the Provincetown painters and actors were known. It's been exciting to try to bring that to light.
These days, when you think about new houses, they're often grand and big and expensive materials. I'm struck by how simple these designs are and how unextravagant they are.
I think there's a lot to learn from these buildings. I mean, they're green before green. You know, I mean, they're talk about a light footprint. They're almost not touching the ground.
Really ahead of their time.
Yeah, and they're very optimistic, I think. I think that's why one reason people are attracted to mid-20th century modernism. It's a very optimistic kind of worldview. I find it very hopeful.
I want to hear just a little bit finally about the challenge of bringing some of these back, Peter, because it sounds like if not for your efforts and the efforts of others, they would have just collapsed and gone into the dunes pretty much.
There's a lot of challenges in that they're very lately constructed and sometimes by amateurs. So in the case of this house, the footings were all poured with beach sand, which has salt in it. So they had all crumbled and fallen apart. It's a very unforgiving climate, and the buildings were in some cases almost temporary structures. So the challenge is to restore the building without losing the patina and the idea behind the building.
It's actually something we talk about in the early part of our book, the kind of ephemeral nature of so much architecture on Cape Cod. There's a history on the Cape of old buildings inhabited by artists for creative purposes that eventually find their way back into the water. It's almost as though artists are trying to fly too close to the sun because it's such bliss to be here on the water kind of making your art. As we learned in our research, the Cape is destined to be around for about 5,000 more years, and it might be completely gone by then. So there's no sense of permanence, and I think that's understood, but it just makes everything that much more thrilling.
Well, Christine Cipriani and Peter McMahon are co-authors of Cape Cod Modern Mid-Century Architecture and the Community on the Outer Cape. Thank you both very much. Thank you for bringing us out to this beautiful place.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down.
Christine Cipriani and Peter McMahon's book is called Cape Cod Modern Mid-Century Architecture and Community on the Outer Cape. There's more information, as well as pictures of the Hatch House and some of the other modern houses on the Outer Cape at radioboston.org.